This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest. I'm T. Shao Ik with Juliet Jacobs and Lim Soo Ann in the studio. It's World Mental Health Day today, and the theme for this year is mental health promotion and suicide prevention. So according to the World Health Organization, more than 800,000 people die by suicide a year. That makes it the principal cause of death among people 15 to 29 years old.
Right, and Dr. Alberto Trimboli, who's the president of the World Federation for Mental Health Day, which is the organization that spearheads World Mental Health Day, he says that the reason for making suicide prevention the theme of this year is to attract the attention of governments so that the issue might be given priority in public health agendas around the world. So he also mentioned that getting people to talk about a subject that tends to be taboo and about which many hold mistaken and prejudiced ideas, this will help the community to learn about the risk factors so that they can help identify and learn how to address them.
Yes, and one of the main messages for this year's campaign is that suicide is preventable, which is why all of our efforts and public policies should focus on prevention. But, you know, often people who suffer from mental illness lack access to mental health services, sometimes because there are no services in their community, and sometimes because they have to wait months to be seen.
Yeah, and sometimes I suppose there's also the stigma attached to it, right? And that is a great deterrent for many. But today what we wanted to zone in on was is maternal mental health, because virtually all women can develop mental disorders, especially during pregnancy and in the first year after delivery. So here are some stats about maternal mental health. According to the WHO, worldwide, about 10% of pregnant women and 13% of women who have just given birth experience a mental disorder, which is primarily depression.
Right.
Yeah, and this number is even higher in developing countries, with stats rising to 15.6% during pregnancy and 19.8% after childbirth. So in severe cases, mothers' suffering might be so severe that they may even die by suicide. And in addition to that, the affected mothers won't be able to function properly, and as a result, and then from there, the children's growth and development may be negatively affected as well.
But
of course, mental health struggles don't always disappear after the first year of a baby's birth. You have the mental load of motherhood, endless running to-do list. I'm sure both of you are familiar with that.
Nodding our heads vigorously.
And that can cause a lot of stress and sometimes even depression among both stay-at-home mothers and also working mothers.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, personally, when I discuss anything about the struggles of motherhood with friends or family, you know, everyone is very kind and they do listen, and, you know, they are very, you know, sorry to hear that I'm going through that. But the closing remark is always, but look at what beautiful children you have, you know. And as much as I agree to that, I don't know how helpful that comment is to a lot of people, because to some, it may come across as a rebuke, you know, like you shouldn't complain. Think of the people who can't have kids. Think of those with kids with special needs. You know, your children don't have those sorts of issues. And then also think of the people who have lost their children, for example.
So count your blessings and don't
complain.
Don't whine, basically, is what... It's what you perceive it to sound like.
Some people might, right? Yeah. And as a result of that, then they don't talk about it.
Absolutely,
and then again, it becomes more and more ingrained, and, you know, they keep it in, and it just becomes a complete disorder, a mental disorder. So earlier today, I spoke to Vizsla Kumaresan. She's a clinical psychologist, and we were talking about mothers dealing with depression, you know, as new mothers, as stay-at-home mothers, and also as working mothers. So the first thing we tackled was symptoms of maternal depression.
So I think when we talk about maternal depression, a lot of people recognize it as the baby blues. And baby blues is actually quite common. Maternal depression is less common.
Okay.
So baby blues is quite common to last up to 2 weeks after a baby is born. And then anything that goes on beyond 2 weeks becomes maternal depression.
Mm-hmm.
The symptoms are not too different from, you know, just the kind of major depressive disorder that people are more aware of. This includes things like mood swings, sadness, irritability, feeling overwhelmed, crying. And what is a bit different between maternal depression or baby blues and the regular kind of major depressive disorder is how the mother feels about the baby.
Right.
With maternal depression, there is the mother sometimes rejects the baby. Doesn't want to spend time with the baby. The mother might have actually you know, kinds of weird thoughts or thoughts of harming the baby, inability for the mother to form a bond with the baby, and, you know, general apathy in the mother regarding the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, these are usually not very good signs for the baby's health. Unfortunately for, you know, the baby is very, very dependent on the mother for its survival, and it can be dangerous to both the mother and the baby.
Okay, so that's maternal depression. So I guess that only, does that mean that only goes to when the child is a certain age? So let's say you are a mother experiencing depression as your child is older. Is that not classified as such under maternal depression, or is that just depression?
Okay, so it will depend on when the depression started.
Mm-hmm.
So for a lot of mothers, maternal depression may go undetected.
Right.
And that can, if left prolonged, can develop into full-blown major depressive disorder. And for some women, it can even develop into postpartum psychosis.
Mm. Of course, those come with some very heavy health risks as well, right?
Postpartum psychosis is also when, you know, the mother starts experiencing hallucinations, delusions. They might be, quote-unquote, very high, extremely agitated. They might have sleeplessness, excessive energy. They might even be paranoid. They might have, you know, really weird thoughts about the baby or their pregnancy or about or what the baby is doing or the baby could do.
Mm-hmm.
The mother could also appear like a very good mother because they become overly obsessive about the baby.
Right.
Mm.
Wow.
So it's a cluster of symptoms, and oftentimes, you know, it depends on not just the mother to be aware of herself, but it's also very important that the people around the mother, you know, the partner, the mother's, you know, whoever is, I think in Asian families, it's quite common for like a member of the extended family, either the mother's mother or the father's mother, to come help look after her and the baby.
Right.
It's also very important that these other people also become aware of things like depression and to recognize that these things are not okay and to try and get help as soon as possible.
And that is something I want to talk about, you know, like people will say, like, what do you have to feel sad about? You know, you have a beautiful child, you know, you shouldn't be feeling this way. And that, is, I think, is very counterproductive.
Yes. And I think this also adds to the guilt of the new mother.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's just so much how people talk about pregnancy and the expectant baby, you know, that it's a beautiful experience, that, you know, all whatever you're feeling now will disappear the moment they put the baby in your arms, and all those other things that people say. I'm sure it's true. I'm sure it's true for many people. But not talking about this other side of giving birth, this mm-hmm. other experience of having given birth, also complicates the early detection of things like baby blues or maternal depression.
Okay, so now let's talk about stay-at-home mothers, right? So, I mean, I want to talk about stay-at-home mothers and also working mothers, but for stay-at-home moms, you know, balancing that task of raising the kids, running the household, and also, you know, dealing, fending off comments about how it must be so nice and relaxing to not have to go to work. Do you think that depression is often overlooked among the stay-at-home moms? You know, because not going to work every day, sometimes it's viewed as a privileged choice, like, wow, you can afford it, good for you, you're so lucky.
And I think this is one of the other myths that we have to start addressing, that emotional labor, looking after other people, working, you know, doing housework, that is also work. That is also labor. And while it may be unpaid, it doesn't mean that it's any less important, it's any less stressful, or any less difficult.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think we, society as a whole, needs to stop viewing stay-at-home moms as, you know, just freeloaders or lazy or privileged or any of those things. You know, it comes with its own share of difficulties.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes because they're in seclusion almost, right? You know, they're at home, and I'm sure that also has a very negative impact on them and on their mental health as well.
Yes. Totally. You know, their entire life lifestyles become dependent on the babies, on the children. Everything they do, you know, has to be structured around the children's timing. Mm. And of course, you know, babies don't follow plans.
Never. They never do.
Yeah. You know, you think that, okay, I'll put them to bed between 10 and 12 and then I'll be able to sit down and have a cup of tea. But that never works. Yeah. You know, the baby might decide he wants to wake up at 10:30 instead. Yeah.
Or not sleep at all.
And not to forget that the babies also sometimes don't sleep at night. Mm-hmm. And it largely falls on mothers to be responsible for responding to the baby's cries at night.
Yep.
You know, because dad works outside the home, he needs his rest, and therefore moms have to do it. This means that they are sleep deprived, they're tired, and their responsibilities have been reduced.
So that's for the stay-at-home moms, right? But on the other hand, there are also, of course, working mothers like myself dealing with that guilt, you know, that work-family conflict, you know, the combination of sometimes very impossible and incompatible ideals of work and home, you know, and then there's no real policies to support, you know, working families. I feel that that's put mothers in this kind of no-win situation. I don't know if you agree with that.
I definitely agree with this. I think a lot of the national policies ignore emotional labor, ignore care work. And I think the Khazanah Research Institute released a study on this last week, talking about how important it is to take into consideration these things when working out employment policies. And more attention needs to be put on things like that. This conversation's been going on for years. So women's organizations have been talking about it for a long time. Women's rights conventions have also included things like this. But it's very slow to pick up. And I think it's largely because of resistance regarding what women's roles are, how care work is often feminized, and also, you know, putting women into the workforce is less about a holistic view on women's rights, and a lot of the policies are geared towards increasing performance or increasing productivity rather than a rights perspective, which should be all-encompassing.
And I think we're very far away from even forming something, a policy like that, aren't we?
I think so. And I don't think Malaysia is the only country. I think a lot of countries are struggling with this. I think the Northern European states are the ones who still are leading the way when it comes to things like this. Mm-hmm. And if you look at those models, it's a lot of social investment. It's a lot of government investment in women, in understanding the role of care work in creating good citizens or good humans. And that's something that needs to be taken into consideration, I think, when we are forming policies around that.
So, you know, it is World Mental Health Day today. And, you know, if there's a mother out there experiencing depression, or, you know, she realizes that, you know, these are the symptoms of, you know, what is depression, what would your advice be to them?
I think firstly to recognize that it is okay for you to have these kinds of symptoms. A lot of mothers go through it. It is not a character flaw. It doesn't mean you're a bad mother. And this is a real condition. I think the other confounding factor in dealing with maternal depression appropriately is the stigma around talking about mental health or seeking help for mental health problems. Help is available. A lot of mothers are afraid of taking medication, and psychiatric help is not the only help available for dealing with maternal depression. Talk therapy is available, and it's probably good for you to explore these options. Yes, you know, it's being a new mother is overwhelming. It can be very lonely. It is very scary, and it's okay to ask for help.
Okay, but you know, let's say the situation comes up that the mother, you know, is dealing with depression, has actually said, I need help. But, you know, some family and friends, they say, oh, I think you look fine. You don't look ill. You must be all right. It's all in your head. I mean, what would your advice be to people for that?
I want to stress that we are the experts of our own selves. We know when we're not doing okay. We know when we're not, quote unquote, normal. And that should be enough of a guide to tell you that something needs to be done. Mm-hmm. You know, the decision of whether or not you need to get help or, you know, is something that you should make yourself. If you're not sure, it's always advisable to seek the advice of a mental health professional who might be able to then give you a diagnosis and guide you as to what's the best way to deal with it.
So that was clinical psychologist Vizla Kumaresan. And, you know, just going on what she said, I think many adults, they aren't even prepared for that kind of immense amount of change that their lives, you know, in their lives that a child can bring. Yeah. So again, you know, as Vizla was saying, to any mothers listening, please know that it's okay to be overwhelmed and that it's definitely okay to admit that you're feeling that way and to seek help.
Yeah. And speaking of seeking help, you know, it's the healthcare providers play such an important role, right? Because mothers, we do come into contact with, say, our gynecologist quite frequently for those checkups, or perhaps whenever you see your GP, that your family doctor. These are like key touch points that doctors can use to engage with their patients to find out if there are mental health issues that they're dealing with, or just struggle in their daily lives which could exacerbate mental health issues.
Yeah.
But from, you know, every, like, because I do the Health and Living show, and when we talk to doctors, they recognize that mental health is so important in every aspect of healthcare. Mm-hmm. But what's really coming through as well is that especially GPs, I think, they just need training. How do you broach the subject of mental health with your patient? You can't just say, are you feeling depressed? Because it's not something that people necessarily recognize in themselves.
Exactly.
Or want to recognize. And so then how do you ease into the subject? How do you get them to open up about what's going on in their lives? And then from there, be able to tease out, okay, are there mental health issues linked to those struggles?
Yeah, that's, I mean, for like gynecologists, like you said, it's an easy thing to ask, especially mothers who have just given birth. So like after our 6 weeks of, after the birth, right, we go for a 6-week checkup. Mm-hmm. So it's always something, I mean, with my gynecologist, anyway, she always asks, how's your mental health doing? How are you coping with the stress and everything? And, you know, can give, you know, great advice if I am facing anything.
Yeah.
But like you said, in other situations, you know, even with heart patients, for example, how do you even start to broach that subject?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the theme for this year's World Mental Health Day, as we said earlier, is about prevention of suicide, you know. And that World Health Organization is urging for governments to focus more on policies that can prevent suicide. And I'm just thinking about what we've achieved here in Malaysia, which is small steps, but quite promising, you know. Things like the Befrienders helpline getting waivers on. So sorry, I'm just all over the place today. Where telcos in Malaysia are waiving the fees for calls made to the Befrienders helpline, and Befrienders have actually said that that's been a huge help to them, and just encouraged more people to be able to call in and just have someone to talk to. Yeah. And another thing that the government has announced that they are trying to work towards is the decriminalization of suicide, which is something that still contributes a lot to the taboo and stigma of mental health in the country.
Exactly. Because, yeah. I mean, imagine if you've already attempted this and then to be taken into custody after that. What kind of stress is that putting you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. When you really need the help at that point. And so there is actually a petition calling on the World Health Assembly and the UN World Health Organization to officially recognize World Maternal Mental Health Day, which is what we've been speaking about today. They want that to be commemorated annually on the first Wednesday of May. So the bottom line, of course, is that maternal mental health matters. It's another aspect of mental health that I think is very often overlooked as well.
Yeah. And we frequently discuss all aspects of mental health on our Health and Living segment, and you can find those podcasts by searching for mental health on our website or on our app. And that's all the time that we have for today's show. So you can look us up on our Facebook page, BFM The Bigger Picture, if you'd like to drop us a line. And of course, you can download the podcast from this show at bfm.my/dailydigest. on our BFM app or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on Front Row, Shamila Gunnison will be talking to two artists who are part of an art exhibition called Banana Leaf. We'll leave you now with Coldplay, Don't Panic, right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.